वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Many of you have come here today. How many of you have come here today? Okay. So, yesterday we started the seminar. Is the sound all right? Yesterday we started the seminar on Uddhav Gita. Uddhav Gita has been described in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. In first 10 cantos, different aspects of Puran has been described. Of Mahapuran has 10 symptoms leading to ashray or supreme shelter or ultimate benefit. So that is coming to Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna, not an incarnation, but Krishna as the source of all incarnations. And after that description, after going to this complete descriptions of a Puran, Krishna now is advising Uddhav on the essential teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam. And that is Uddhav Gita. Uddhav Gita is from 7th chapter to 29th chapter. These 23 chapters are describing Uddhav Gita in the 11th canto. And in that 11th canto, Krishna is very emphatically pointing out that the ultimate goal is pure devotion to Krishna. Gradually, step by step, he is describing that. And he starts off the description with that anecdote of an abadhuta whom Yadu, King Yadu, Krishna's ancestor, met. And this Abadhuta, or a Paramhamsa, devotee of the Lord, described about 24, that how he learned different spiritual instructions from 24 different gurus. There are various less spiritual lessons he learned from different personalities, different living entities, and also different phenomena, different elements. So, after describing that, he pointed out that the goal of fruitive activities is to offer those activities to Krishna. Fruitive activities means acting for the sake of enjoying the results of the action. Generally, people act in order to enjoy the results of those actions. But Krishna pointed out in the 10th chapter that the enjoying the results of action, even though they are performed or executed according to the instructions of the Vedas, is ultimately useless. But one must develop pure devotion to Krishna, because that is the ultimate goal. Then the purpose of renunciation and sannyas also should be to ultimately become a pure devotee of Krishna. So in this way, time and time again, through different chapters, Krishna is pointing out that the ultimate goal of life or ultimate goal of any spiritual activity is to develop pure love for Krishna. That is the goal of life. And besides that, there is no other objective. The purpose of our existence in the material nature, or the reasons for our material bondage, is our rejection of Krishna. And as a result of that, everybody is suffering. So how can we get out of this condition, imprisonment? Simply by developing our loving relationship with Krishna. So that is the ultimate goal of life. So now we are coming to the 12th chapter of Uddhav Gita, or rather 12th chapter of 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. This chapter has been entitled as Beyond Renunciation and Knowledge. Renunciation is sannyas, renouncing. Yes, renunciation is essential, renunciation is beneficial, but what is beyond renunciation? What is that sound? Maybe you can switch off the fan, there's no need for the fan. So, this ultimate goal of life, one can understand only due to the association of a pure devotee of the Lord. Without the association, without the mercy of a pure devotee of the Lord, it is not possible to receive the informations about the spiritual sky. It's a very simple to understand that. That is beyond our sense perception. How can we know about that? Things that we cannot see. Things that about that we do not have any access through our senses. How can we get to know about that? Unless and until somebody who has the information about that world comes and tells us. For example, at the beginning, even Brahma did not have this knowledge. Although Brahma came directly from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Brahma did not have this knowledge. Brahma was in ignorance. That actually indicates that in material nature, everybody is born in ignorance. Janmana jayate shudra. Shudra means a person who is in ignorance. So by birth, everyone is in ignorance. Even Brahma was in ignorance. But Brahma was inquisitive to know. Like, what should I do? Who am I? What am I doing here? Where did I come from? and that such led Brahma to receive the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as a result of that, finally, Brahma received the instructions from the Lord. And that instruction from the Supreme Personality of Godhead came from within. Another thing, that this knowledge cannot be acquired externally. This knowledge comes from within. Therefore, this knowledge is known as revealed knowledge. Revealed. It's a matter of revelation. It's revealed. This knowledge we cannot acquire by our intellectual endeavor. This knowledge can be received only by the mercy of a Vaishnava who comes as a bona fide spiritual master. So we see that Brahma received the knowledge from within his heart. That is how this knowledge came to this world. And also yesterday we were discussing, like, this knowledge was not available in the Western world. This knowledge was limited only within India. But then Srila Prabhupada came, and then this knowledge has become accessible, available in the West. Had Prabhupada not have come, we wouldn't have been sitting here discussing about Uddhava Gita. So this is how this knowledge spreads, individually and collectively. So time and time again, this point also has been established. Only by the association of a saintly personality, this knowledge is available. That's the only means, that's the only way. Without the mercy of a devotee, it's impossible to receive this knowledge. The books are there, containing this knowledge, but still this knowledge will not be available. Like we notice, before Prabhupada came to the West, Bhagavad Gita was available. Many people read Bhagavad Gita, even Jefferson, Thoreau, these great philosophers, they were exposed to Bhagavad Gita. But what did they understand? They appreciated Bhagavad Gita from their intellectual point of view, but the essence of Bhagavad Gita was not available to them. Meaning, Bhagavad Gita was available, but devotional service to Krishna was not available. Only after Srila Prabhupada came, then devotion to Krishna became available. So many people became devotees, so many people are becoming devotees all over the world just by the mercy of one personality. So this is how this knowledge actually spreads, by the mercy of a saintly personality, which means a pure devotee of the Lord. Now in this chapter, the glories of the association of the devotee is being described in the 12th chapter. What does the association of a pure devotee do? It destroys the soul's attachment to the material life. An individual in the material, everybody in this material nature is attached to the material enjoyment, sense gratification. Everybody. Starting from an insect up to the most exalted personality. They all are, and they all think that the goal of life is to enjoy. From the childhood, one is directed, go to school, study nicely. Then go to college, become qualified, so that you can enjoy. But when you come across a pure devotee of the Lord, then what he says? That's all useless. Give it up. And the association of a pure devotee, saintly devotees, destroy the soul's attachment to material life. And he becomes attracted to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is the important consideration. We can give up something when you get something better. Say, for example, in your hand, you have some silver. But then when you get some gold, then what do? Do you hold on to the silver? You drop the silver, get the gold. But then there is a handful of diamond. What do? Drop the gold, take the diamond. So similarly, when we get something higher, we spontaneously give up that is lower in order to have that is higher. So that is what we actually learn from a devotee. Like devotee, like yesterday that point came up, that it is said that devotee should not enjoy. It is, one should not try to enjoy. No. One should try to give up the false enjoyment, wrong enjoyment, what goes on in the name of enjoyment but actually suffering. One should give that up for the sake of real enjoyment. And it is not a matter of scholarship. It's a matter of common sense. So that's why it is pointed out time and time again, to become a devotee of Krishna, one doesn't have to become a big scholar. One has to have simple common sense. Unfortunately, big scholars don't have that. And that's why they can't accept it. That is the unfortunate state of affair. And then it has been pointed out, Krishna pointed out to Uddhava, that Uddhava, nothing in this world, no other endeavor, even spiritual endeavor, can give us pure devotion. He's saying, Sankhya, yoga, religious activities, study of scriptures, austerities, renunciation, work of Ishta and Purtam, these are also purificatory and pious activities. Vows of fasting, worship of the demigods, secret mantras, visiting of holy places, nor the adherence of any major or minor regulative principle can offer the same result. What we can get from the association of a pure devotee of the Lord cannot be achieved by any of these endeavors, which actually means a perfection of jnana, sankhya philosophy, perfection of yoga. One may achieve the perfection of yoga, still he won't get that. That will be discussed in the next chapter, in one of the later chapters, I'll come to that. So all these activities are considered to be pious activities prescribed in the Vedas, but even those activities cannot give that spiritual benefit that one derives simply from the association of a devotee. On the other hand, by the association of devotees, what to speak of saintly personalities, pious individuals, even the demons can become devotees. Demons can become devotees of the Lord. Many demons have become devotees. Although born in a demoniac family, to begin with, Prahlad Maharaj, Bali Maharaj, Britrasura, Vanasura, Bibhishan, they are born in demoniac families. But they have become pure devotees of the Lord. What to speak of living in human beings or demigods or demons? Even birds can become devotees. Snakes can become devotees. Like birds. Garuda, a bird, an eternal associate of the Lord. Jatayu was a bird. But because of his association with King Dasharatha, he became a devotee. And he gave his life for the sake of protecting Sita Devi. Gave his life. Ravana killed him. But he fought with Ravana. Ravana was such a terrible demon. But this bird fought with Ravana, broke his chariot. Ravana had a tough time fighting with him. So these are the wonderful characteristics. Kaliya became a devotee, a snake. Although initially he had Kaliya had such an inimical attitude. Snakes are generally envious, violent, aggressive, cruel. But this serpent became a devotee. There are other instances in Puran that snakes became a devotee. Once a snake came across Narad Muni and asked Narad Muni, "Can you please give me some good advice?" So Narad Muni said, "Don't bite." And so the snake took the advice and snake stopped biting. So after some time, Narad Muni came and found that the snake was in a pathetic state. He asked what happened. He said, "Well, people beat me up. They throw stones at me. That now that I have become non-violent." So Narad Muni said, "Why is that?" He said, "Because I don't bite, people are not afraid of me anymore. So they are just beating me and doing all kinds of torturing me in various ways." So Narad Muni said, "I told you not to bite, but I didn't tell you not to show your hood." So here is another instance when a snake became a devotee. We know the hunter, Mrigari, became a devotee. So this is how it becomes obvious how powerful the association of a pure devotee is. This is the potency, this is the power of the association of a pure devotee. Like they are, although they may be illiterate, they may be in a very, very degraded state of existence, they may be completely in the mode of different modes of material nature, but a pure devotional service can elevate them, or the association of a pure devotee can elevate them to the platform of pure devotion. And that's why yesterday we discussed about the touchstone. What is the characteristic of a touchstone? In the material nature, there are touchstones. But what that touchstone do? It turns base metal into gold. Turns base metal into gold. But what does the spiritual touchstone do? It turns any other object into a touchstone. So that is the quality of a pure devotee. It converts a pure devotee, any other living entity, into a pure devotee. And then finally he is pointing out about the damsels of Braj. The damsels of Vrindavan, the gopis, they were not very learned. They were not so much concerned about the studies of Vedas and practicing the Vedic rituals and so forth. They were simple village girls. They were cowherd girls, not even Brahmana girls. Or even some Brahmanas also, anyway, I'll come to that later. Like the wives of the Brahmanas. They became devotees of Krishna. But Krishna is specifically speaking about the cowherd damsels, the damsels of Vrindavan. Hari Bol, either listen to the class or just, or go at the back, okay? So, the best devotees are the damsels of Vrindavan. That's what Krishna is pointing out. Why? Because the way they surrendered themselves to Krishna, they offered themselves to Krishna, that is the greatest kind of offering. Like, they offered themselves to Krishna without any reservations. They did not have any other consideration. For the sake of Krishna, they were prepared to give up everything. Like they didn't care about their family, they didn't care about their reputation. In the Vedic society, a reputation for a woman is very, very important. It is considered the greatest jewel of a woman that she wears is her reputation, her chastity. But these young girls of Vrindavan, they didn't care for their reputation. Their activity was apparently immoral. They rejected, they gave up their husbands, they gave up their children. They didn't have any consideration for anybody. It has been described like the mother was taking care of the child. As soon as she heard Krishna's flute, she dropped her baby and ran. Somebody was taking care of her husband. So, but that is the highest devotion. And we can see also, apparently it seems, it's such a, it's not right. Sometimes the moralists bring up that point. Why Krishna behaved like that? But in that respect, our Acharya has made a very simple point. That if somebody's wife becomes a devotee of Krishna, does the husband mind that? If provided the husband is in right consciousness. Like there are so many ladies in our society we see. Like they are married women. They have become attracted to Krishna. Is there anything wrong? Rather, they are glorified that they have become attracted to Krishna. And even the husbands feel proud about it. My wife is a devotee of Hare Krishna. So, and we make it a point also. When the husband becomes a devotee, one of the questions that we ask is your wife supporting you? And we make it a point that make her also a devotee if she is not a devotee. If the wife is a devotee, we ask her, make your husband into a devotee. So that is the ultimate goal of life. So then Krishna pointed out the greatness of the gopis' devotion. When the gopis were with Krishna, one night appeared to be like a moment to them. Their attachment to Krishna was so intense, their love for Krishna was so intense, that when they were with Krishna, they forgot everything. Even they forgot about time. A night appeared to be like a moment to them. And when they became separated from Krishna, then a moment appeared to be like A millennium according to the calculation of a demigod. Nimeshena jugaitam chakshusha prabrishaitam. So this is how intense was their love for Krishna. When they were with Krishna, they were in the height of ecstasy. When they were separated from Krishna, when Krishna left Vrindavan, of course, that's another point. Krishna never left Vrindavan. It simply appeared that Krishna left Vrindavan. Vrindavanam parityajya kutra kadapi na gacchati. Jiva Goswami pointed out. Krishna never takes a step out of Vrindavan. Krishna is always in Vrindavan. Anyway, but it seemed that when they felt that Krishna has left Vrindavan, then they were plunged into an ocean of agony. So much so that they stopped eating. When Uddhava went to Vrindavan to carrying the message of Krishna, then he found that in the fireplace where they cook, there were cobwebs. Because they haven't been used for so long. I don't know whether you get cobwebs here. Do you get cobwebs here? Also, okay. In India, it's a pretty common thing. If something is not used for some time, the rooms or something, you get cobwebs. So that means they didn't eat. They didn't cook food due to the separation from Krishna. The consideration was how they were still alive. They stopped eating. And this also has been pointed out in Brihad Bhagavatamritam. That question came up. How are they still alive then? Although they stopped eating. Then Balaram actually made that point. Because they're constantly remembering you, they're constantly chanting your holy name, that is what is keeping their life in their body. Just by the chanting of the holy name. The Supreme Lord Sri Krishna, after imparting this knowledge, this instruction to Uddhav, advised that for the sake of attaining the absolute truth, Uddhav should give up all considerations of religion and irreligion, as promulgated in the Srutis and Smritis, and instead take shelter of the examples of the women of Vrindavan. There is no need to follow any scriptures or follow any instructions that have been given in the Vedas, Shrutis and Smritis. What should be the ultimate goal of life? To follow the examples of the residents of Vrindavan. So now we go to the chapter 13. This chapter is describing about Hamsavatar. Brahma had four Manasaputras, four sons that appeared from his mind. Who are the first four sons of Brahma? The four Kumaras. So the four Kumaras approached Brahma about the ultimate goal of life. And then Brahma admitted that he actually does not have, he is not in a position to instruct about that. And it has been explained why. That's because Brahma got so much involved in management that he became, he was quite doubtful whether he would be able to, because his consciousness was affected by the mode of passion, whether he would be able to give the right advice. Therefore, Brahma admitted that maybe we should approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is another thing about a devotee of the Lord. He's honest. When he feels that he's not in a position to give instruction, he admits it and says, okay, this is the situation, so let me go to a higher authority to ask about that. And so when they approached the Lord, then the Lord appeared as Hamsa. Hamsa. Hamsa means a swan. So this is the Hamsa avatar that the Lord appeared in Satya Yuga. And he instructed that the human beings, overwhelmed by sense gratification, become bound by the three modes of material nature. What is the condition of a human being? A human being naturally becomes attracted to sense gratification. And this desire for sense gratification is simply due to the influence of the modes of material nature. Therefore, the material nature becomes entangling. The spirit soul, as soon as it comes into the material nature, he becomes entangled. And what is that entanglement? Okay, maybe we can discuss this point a little elaborately. How does a living entity become entangled in the material nature? A living entity, as soon as it turns his face away from Krishna, Krishna bohir mukh hoiya bhogobancha kare, bhogobancha kare, desires to enjoy. As soon as a living entity turns his face away from Krishna, he develops his desire for enjoyment. So, how does it happen? A consciousness of a living entity is very minute. So it can be projected only onto one point or one direction. So when a living entity's consciousness is projected towards Krishna, when a living entity is looking towards Krishna, then he is spiritually situated. He is in the spiritual sky. But the moment a living entity turns his face away from Krishna, somehow or other, this point we cannot say why or how. Sometimes people ask questions, if the living entities were with Krishna, then how did they leave the association of Krishna and come to this material nature? And the thing is, somehow or other, and Prabhupada said, actually this is a very important point. Prabhupada actually mentioned that the cause of our fall down will never be able to figure out from the material point of view. Being in the material nature will never be able to find out why we fell down. Because the cause of our fall down lies in the spiritual nature. Therefore, unless and until you go back to the spiritual nature, we won't be able to find out why we fell down. But at least theoretically, it has been pointed out this way. Somehow or other, living entity looks away from Krishna. Now, what is away from Krishna? Away from Krishna is Krishna's external energy. What is the nature of Krishna's external energy? Inferior. But a jiva is superior. Although minute, a jiva is superior. Now, when a superior comes across an inferior, what happens? A junior devotee comes to a senior devotee. And senior devotee says, do this, do that. Right? Somebody once, long time ago, told, in ISKCON, I can figure out very easily who is the newest arrival. Because it goes down the chain of disciplic succession. A senior one tells a junior one to do something. That one tells somebody else who is junior to him to do something. And finally, the one who does it, he is the newest arrival in the movement. The junior most devotee. So, it is a natural tendency of a superior to dominate over the inferior. So, material nature is inferior. A living entity is coming from Krishna's superior energy. So, he naturally develops a desire to lord over. Now, is a living entity lord and master? A living entity's actual identity is that he is a servant. His constitution is that of a servant. But now he is assuming the role of a lord and master. So is that real? No. That's why he gets a covering of false ego. False ego. Wrong identity. Unreal identity. That is how a living entity, as soon as he comes in contact with material nature just grabs him. Nikatastha maya tare japotiya dhare. Very tightly grabs him. And he gets the covering of false ego. His identity changes. From the servant, now he became a master. Then he begins to plan how he is going to enjoy this material nature. He gets the second covering of intelligence. And then his consciousness begins to flow towards the material direction through the mind. In this way, with false ego, intelligence and mind, he gets entangled or entrapped and develops a subtle body comprising of these three subtle elements. And then according to the shape of his subtle body or condition of his subtle body, material nature awards him a gross body. Gross body is not our to develop. Gross body is a gift of material nature according to our subtle body. And in this way, a living entity becomes entangled in this material nature. So, living entity gets entangled in the material nature, but what happens when he gets entangled in the material nature? What is the result of his false ego, false identity? The result of his false identity is acting in a wrong way. And wrong action leads him to suffering. As a result of that, living entity constantly suffers in the material nature. The living entity, overwhelmed by sense gratification, becomes bound by the three modes of nature. And therefore, he should become free from the entanglement of the material nature. So how to do that? With the mode of goodness, we can overcome the influence of passion and ignorance. But eventually, we have to give up the mode of goodness also. And that is possible only through devotional service. Mode of goodness is not the goal. Mode of goodness is utilized, used simply to get rid of the influence of the passion and ignorance. But eventually we have to give up the mode of goodness also. And then one becomes situated in the transcendental mode, pure goodness, which is the spiritual state. And there, Krishna is making one very important point. This point often comes up, that is the soul affected by the mode of goodness? I mean, is the soul affected by the three modes of material nature? The answer is no. Krishna is saying, the three modes, goodness, passion and ignorance, are related to material intelligence, not to the soul. One should conquer the lower modes of passion and ignorance by the mode of goodness. And then one must surpass the mode of goodness by acting in the transcendental mode of pure goodness. Now, what is acting in the pure goodness? Devotional service, pure devotional service. By associating with the things in the mode of goodness, one becomes more fully situated in that mode. The three modes increase their different influences through various types of scriptures, etc. And due to one's conditioning, one identifies with the material body and consequently with the mode of passion. Passion, influence of mode of passion is to identify with the body and become active in the material nature. It's describing how it happens. Then this passion produces misery. Passion produces misery. Mode of goodness produces happiness. Mode of passion produces misery. And mode of ignorance produces bewilderment. So, okay. So anyway, this is how Krishna instructed as Hamsavatar. And here, this point has been made. Even Brahma is suffering agitation of the mind on account of the duties he has to perform. As I said, Brahma is a big manager. And due to his involvement in his managerial duties, his mind is agitated. Therefore, when he was questioned by his sons, who are born from his mind, about the means for driving our desires of sense gratification, he admitted that he was incapable of giving them an answer or properly guide them. And in order to receive some insight into this matter, he took shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then the Lord appeared as Hamsa. Lord Hamsa proceeded to give instruction about the categorical identity of the self, the different states of consciousness. Different states of consciousness are wakeful state, sleep state, and deep sleep state. These are also pertaining to our material body. When we are in the gross bodily platform, that state is called wakeful state. When both the gross body and subtle body are active, that is the wakeful state. When the gross body is inactive, but the subtle body is active, that is the dream state. We dream. What is the dream? Dream is to go into the plane of the subtle body, act in the plane of subtle body. The gross body fell asleep. Gross body is unconscious, inert. But the subtle body is still active. That state is the state of dream state. But when both gross and subtle bodies are inactive, that is the state of deep sleep. That is the state of deep sleep. Wakeful state is a state of generally state that is influenced by the passion. Dream state also is influenced by passion. But deep sleep is in ignorance. So when we are in ignorance, then we are in deep sleep. But to transcend that, we have to go beyond the bodily platform. Both gross and subtle bodies. And the means of conquering of a material existence, the sages headed by Shanaka became freed from all their doubts by hearing the words of the Lord and worshipped him with pure devotion in mature love of God. So we still have about 25 minutes. Should we go to the next chapter or should I ask questions? How many of you want to ask questions? Very good. Okay, so let's go into questions because, as I said, like question answers is the best way to cultivate knowledge. So, Anandini? I'm sorry. The question is that concerning this last point, wakeful dream and deep sleep state, like when we go into the deep sleep, how does it contribute to knowledge? Ignorance doesn't actually contribute much to knowledge. Deep sleep is, but at the same time we need it. You know why we need it? Because a living entity, due to the mode of passion, gets involved in the materialistic activities. And these materialistic activities are very painful, very troublesome. Therefore, he needs to give up. Let us consider it this way. What we are doing in the mode of passion? Carrying this lump of this body. A big, heavy burden we are carrying, right? And then we become tired. And we say, to hell with it. And that's the time we go to sleep. We need it. Without sleep, we cannot continue. Right? So that is what the sleep, deep sleep is contributing. But it is actually, in a way, it is taking us close to Krishna. Because we have given up our material consciousness, therefore we are somehow close to Krishna, but without awareness. That's why it's in ignorance. But when that closeness to Krishna happens, with knowledge, that is the real solution to our material bonding. It's happening like passion to ignorance, passion to ignorance, like that. Like in mode of passion, we become active throughout the day, and then at night we fall asleep, enter into ignorance. Then again in the morning, we come back into mode of passion, and then again enter into ignorance at night, falling asleep. But with mode of goodness, we have to come out of that cycle of ignorance, passion, right? And then we have to transcend even the mode of goodness, because mode of goodness runs the risk of falling back into passion again. Like Prabhupada gives the example, they go to this yogis and all these people, they go to the Himalayas, stay there for so long, but then they come back to do some philanthropic work, right? Because they can't stay in that state for too long. They come back to do some philanthropic work, or nowadays they come back to America to make money. So, but the thing is, the sustainable condition will be only when one is situated in pure goodness, completely out, because mode of goodness is also tinged with passion and ignorance. Material mode of goodness, it's not pure goodness, it's tinged with passion and ignorance. But pure goodness is only in spiritual platform. You have a question at the back, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, very good point. Very good point. Like, like in order to do things or achieve things, we have to function in a mode of passion. We have to utilize mode of passion. Otherwise, we won't be able to do it. That's true. That's very true. Like, as we were saying, the activity in the material platform is executed through the mode of passion. Right? Without that, without mode of passion, we cannot actually function. But the point is, generally, mode of passion will lead to suffering. Goodness leads to enjoyment, happiness. Passion leads to misery. But when that passion is utilized for the sake of Krishna consciousness, but when this passion is utilized for Krishna consciousness, then that becomes the cause of freedom from bondage. Like an example can be given. Arjuna is fighting the battle. Prabhupada is saying that you can't fight a battle unless you are extremely angry. You can't kill people unless you are angry, which is in the mode of passion. But this passion of Arjuna is not for his own sense gratification. This passion of Arjuna is utilized for the sake of serving Krishna. So, in Krishna consciousness, when these modes are utilized, then they become the cause of freedom from the bondage, executing devotional service. So yes, passion is necessary in order to do something, but we must be careful that it is done with proper purpose, with the ultimate objective.
Krishna consciousness. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Yes? Spiritual knowledge? Good point, yeah. The point is that you said that the spiritual knowledge is revealed from within, but at the same time Prabhupada is saying that we must use our intelligence and intellect for studying books. The studying books is the platform of sadhana bhakti. We are practicing devotional service. But ultimately, the perfection will come as a revelation from within. Like Divya Gyan, Hride Prakashita. The transcendental knowledge is revealed within the heart. So we are practicing devotional service, sadhana bhakti, to achieve prema bhakti. But that prema, love for Krishna, will develop from within. And as a result of that, Krishna will manifest from within. He is there. So any other, yes? Well, it depends, you know, like, just as any other thing. If it is spiritual, then it is beneficial. If it is material, if you are dreaming that you are rendering devotional service to Krishna, that's very good. But if you are dreaming that you have become a queen and enjoying with the king, then it is. So, ultimate consideration is whether it's material or spiritual. Whether it's for my sense gratification or whether it is for rendering service to Krishna. That is the ultimate criteria. Yes? Yeah, okay, good point. Yeah, there you have to now understand there are two natures, right? Material nature and spiritual nature, right? You are saying living entities by nature, they are like this. They are like that due to the influence of the material nature, right? Living entity wants to enjoy, living entity wants to do certain things. But the living entity is not material. Your body is material. You, the soul, is spiritual. Now the consideration is whether you want to remain in your bodily platform or whether you want to come to a spiritual platform. When you come to the spiritual platform, then you come under the spiritual nature. Then the material nature's influence become automatically diminished. You got the point? Okay. Where are you from? Okay, you can. You are familiar with Prabhupada's books? Yeah, you are reading? Yeah. So read Prabhupada's books, it will become clear. That there are two natures, you know. Like we have two identities, right? We have a physical identity and we have a spiritual identity. Like the body is matter. But the soul? Soul is not matter. Soul is spiritual. Now the consideration is, should we be on the bodily platform or should we try to become elevated to our spiritual identity, the soul? And there is a process by which you can become situated on your spiritual identity. And when you cultivate that, then you overcome the influence of material nature and come to your spiritual state of existence.
Thank you. Hare Krishna. Yes, Krishna Arjun. Yeah, good.
You see, here the consideration is that living entity is a conscious being with his independence. So a living entity can decide whether he will accept it or not. He has the opportunity to become a touchstone. The consideration is whether he is going to take advantage of that opportunity. That is up to him. So that is the only difference. A stone is devoid of independence. So some touchstone touches and becomes stone. Touchstone. Right? But we are not stones. We are... we are conscious living entities with our consciousness, with our ability to discriminate, with the ability to decide. And when we utilize these faculties properly, then yes, we can become. Yeah. Right. And that is why the guru chastises. Whether you like it or not. So the point is that service is an expression of love. But sometimes we find that service dries out our love. Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah. So we are not rendering the service with love, devoid of love. So you see, there are two stages of devotion. One is devotional service in practice. Like when you are practicing, then you have to make an endeavor. That endeavor may not be very pleasing. But when you achieve perfection, then it becomes natural. Like an example can be given, like, you know how to ride a bicycle. Did you just jump into a bicycle and started to ride it? What happened? How did you learn? You had to practice. While you're practicing, did you fall? Did you get hurt? But still you can continue to practice. And then one fine morning, you find yourself all of a sudden, you're balancing on the cycle and you're riding on your own. Right? Then it became easy and natural. So practicing stage is difficult. But practice is necessary to achieve the perfection. But when you achieve the perfection, it becomes spontaneous. Same thing with devotional service. Or same thing with love. Right? Like, here the consideration is, here we have to love somebody whom we cannot see, whom we cannot touch. That is the problem. Right? Therefore, we have to cultivate the process so that we can see him and we can perceive him. But in order to do that, we have to practice. But once we perfect, once we achieve perfection through the practice, then it becomes natural. Because then we find that he is the ultimate object of our love. We love something that is beautiful. He is the most beautiful. We love something that's powerful. He is the most powerful. In this way, he is endowed with all the qualities that attract us. Therefore, love for him is spontaneous. But in order to, we have to develop that love. And the way to develop that love is through hearing. That's the only faculty that we can conceive him with. Only through hearing we can see him. Only through hearing we can perceive him. Therefore, hearing is the only process. But then it works. And then we fall in love with him. Then the service becomes spontaneous. Out of love. All right. Thank you. Yes, Nanda Dulal.
Guru Maharaj, you mentioned that, you know, I just want to ask the person the other way. We don't believe Darwin's theory that, you know, we came from the lowest species of life. But we do believe in that way that, you know, soul transmigration becomes the body. Now, when you fell down, who decides that? Because we are Krishna at that time. Although we and away from him, like what species we come from? Come from the human being, or we start from the different, which human species?
The Prabhupada said that when one falls down, the first position he goes through is Brahma. Like, in a way we can understand, we are coming from spiritual sky. We are coming from there. In the material, what will be the first position that we'll touch? And then this way. So, now how did it happen? But at least, you know, we have to accept the words of our guru, Srila Prabhupada. Okay, any other question? Good. Oh yeah, Aditya Narayan. Yeah.
So, when you're talking about like how we have to develop the feeling of love, I'm thinking like when you chant a japa, we're normally like, we just try to hear the words. But should that also be a mode of chanting with feeling?
Yeah.
And how do we develop that feeling? Because right now we're just like,
The thing is that we have to recognize that it's a prayer. Hare Krishna Mahamantra is actually a prayer. So with the prayerful mood we have to chant. We are offering prayers to Krishna. And the prayers are mixed with or blended with our feelings. Like, Krishna, please deliver me from this miserable suffering condition. That is the first aspect of the prayer. Hare Krishna. I'm suffering in this material nature. Krishna, please deliver me from this suffering condition. And in this way, according to our internal state of consciousness, we will, it will be mixed with our feelings. Prayers are not just
uttering some words. Prayers are heartfelt. Yes.
So our greed is justified to,
Our?
The greed that we have, we want to get out of this, materialistic life.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, it will come.
Get out of this.
Yeah, sure. Tatra laulam atra mullam ekanam. That's why you touched a very important point. Is the greed, that is the only thing that you can pay the price with to get it. Laulam. Laulam means greed. In the material nature, we are greedy for objects of our sense gratification, isn't it? We are greedy for things that will give us physical pleasure. But this greed should be diverted towards receiving the mercy of Krishna. Greed should be there, should be utilized for the right purpose. Hare Krishna.